I was expecting to have a conversation about pretzels. You know the ones I mean, the ones that are nostalgic every time you went to the mall you got as you shopped with your friends and family. But this conversation, I must say, is the one that has surprised me the most, and in the very, very best way. Today, I welcomed on the founder of Auntie Anne's Pretzels, and her story to getting to Auntie Anne's and what it is today will absolutely surprise you and, quite frankly, change your life. I didn't know much about her before this conversation, and it ended up being one that brought me to tears. Now, here's the deal with today's conversation. I didn't know that it was going to end up being one that dove into both of our shared faith. Here's what I'll say. Wherever you stand with your faith journey, this conversation is one that is about overcoming obstacles, wrestling with faith, and the powerful redemption and overcoming on the other side of it. If you have not heard Anne's story, which I would imagine most of us haven't, here is just a little bit about her before we dive into this unbelievably rich conversation. Anne Beeler began twisting pretzels in 1987 and grew a single farmer's market stand into Auntie Anne's, the world's largest hand-rolled soft pretzel franchise. Her professional success, however, was forged after years of darkness, depression, and despair brought on by the death of her 19-month-old daughter. Anne's personal story and entrepreneurial insights are featured on many television shows, including ABC's Secret Millionaire and Good Morning America. In addition, she has been highlighted in numerous publications, such as Fortune Magazine and Inc. Magazine. In 2005, Anne sold Auntie Anne's and has authored three books, Twists of Faith, The Secret Lies Within, and Overcome and Lead. She released her cookbook, Come to the Table, in 2023. Today, Anne speaks to audiences worldwide, inspiring people with her authentic stories and life experiences. Hi, I'm Katie, a hospitality educator and the host of Making Room by Gather podcast. I am set to see our communities get back to the table through hospitality, but it wasn't always this way. My husband and I moved to Thailand, and through it, I experienced some loneliness. And with it, I was given a choice. To sit back and accept it, or to do something about it. And for me, that meant two things. That I needed the healing to learn how to accept an invitation, and the confidence to know how to extend one. Through this process, I developed some of the richest and deepest relationships of my life. Through Making Room by Gather, you will hear conversations from myself and experts in the areas of food, design, and relationships. You see, there are countless things trying to keep us from the table. But can I tell you something? Take a seat, because you are ready. You are capable. You are a good host. You guys may know that Colby and I just welcomed home our first baby, Wesley James. And he has been an absolute dream, except for the fact that we are still waking up every 2 hours and have been every night for the last 12 weeks. So we are pretty tired. Now, when I am this tired, I am known to reach for a little too much coffee during the day. And as someone that cares about my health and is always trying to learn more about it, I definitely started to realize that that was a little bit of a problem. So I started to look for an alternative, because my productivity was getting affected, my creativity was getting affected, and I wanted that to change. That's when I learned about Magic Mind. It is a productivity shot that gives you everything that you hope caffeine would without the negative side effects. I even let Colby try it and my mother-in-law, and they both said, "Hey, wait a second. This stuff actually works." I wanted to learn more about it, and so I looked into what it was made from. There are familiar ingredients like matcha and ashwagandha that both work together to help reduce stress and anxiety without the crash of caffeine. I cannot tell you how much that my whole family recommends Magic Mind to you, whether you are postpartum and welcoming home a newborn, or you are in the middle of a really heightened stress season at work, really everything in between. Magic Mind is a staple for creatives and the everyday host. If you are looking for a way to enhance your productivity, get a little boost of energy, and reduce your stress and anxiety while you're doing it, you really have to try Magic Mind. And you could do so with our code Making Room 20 by heading over to magicmind.com/makingroom for 20% off. And you can actually stack this with the subscription offer and get up to 50% off your subscription of Magic Mind. Be sure to head on over to the link in our profile and try it alongside with us and let us know what you think along the way. I know you're going to love it. So you grew up Amish. And as I was thinking back, you really are only guest that shares that experience or that has that experience. And so I want to hear a little bit from you. We always like to start at the beginning. What do you wish people knew about growing up Amish?
Well, there have been a lot of books written and very few of them written by Amish people, but, you know, people that observe and they really hang out or they really stay in the community for a long period of time to get to know the Amish and the Amish Mennonite culture. And, you know, some of what they write about is good. And but there's really nothing like talking to an Amish person or me being ex-Amish. To kind of get the real scoop, the real, truth about what it's like to be Amish. My mom and dad were old order Amish, which means a horse and buggy Amish and no electricity and no, we had no farming with the horses and this kind of thing. So the typical old order Amish, and there's still many, many old order Amish. When I was three, mom and dad left the old order Amish and they went to the, what we called then the black car Amish, which some people know it as the Amish Mennonite, which means we had a black car. We looked Amish, but we had a black car and my dad could farm with the tractors. Yes. That's what he was. That's why he left the old order. And we also had electricity. So wow. We were moving on up, you know, as far as that goes. And I never saw myself as a little Amish girl, but I didn't see myself as old order Amish. I knew the difference growing up, which again, I just stated what that was. But the other part of it was being a black car Amish was that we actually had church services in a church building. In the Amish culture, you have church every other Sunday in someone's home. And the Sunday that you're not going to church, it's pretty much required of you to go visiting people, your family, friends. So it's very, that the idea for that whole thing is to stay connected with community, family, and friends. And so they leave one whole Sunday. It's not mandatory, but it is certainly expected. Sure. On the off Sunday you go visit. So growing up in that culture, I guess, I don't know what your audience knows about the Amish people, but
probably not much. So whatever you want to share. Yeah.
Yeah. So Anderson Cooper, I was on his show a number of years ago, and he said, what do you want the world to know about the Amish people? And I said, okay, let me tell you one thing. Amish people, they know how to have fun. They know how to work hard and they all have a strong faith in God. So, and they also know how to do family well. You know, having said that, it's not perfect. Humans, you know, they're very, very human. And that's the other part of Amish people that people need to see. But because of the way they look, the stoic look and the, you know, pretty, stoic is a good word. When you meet them, they're almost intimidating because like, what do I do with these people? Because they don't look like me. So that gives you kind of the wrong impression of who they really are. So that's why I'm saying they love to have fun. They believe that all work is not, you know, you have to work and play together as a family. And wow. As busy, there are eight of us kids, five boys and three girls. We were always outside on the farm or inside helping mom in the kitchen. I ended up being the little girl in the kitchen because I had hay fever is what they called it back in the day. There was no other name for allergies years ago. It was just hay fever, at least in the world of farming and country living. So I was the only one of eight kids that had hay fever. And so I was asked, I was just kind of a by default, I ended up being the cook and also the baker in the kitchen. So my mom and I spent hours and hours and hours together all the time, every day. And she's the one, obviously, then that taught me how to cook and how to bake. And, you know, even then I feel like God was preparing me. How would I know, right? How would you ever know what God is, you know, preparing you for? And I just believe that as I look back on my life now, I see that as a the hand of God in my life, preparing me for Auntie Anne's soft pretzels. More than that, but ultimately, my love for baking then helped me to, I always knew when I baked something, if it was really good, people would say, "Ooh, that was good." I mean, it was very, there was a lot of verbal exchange when it comes to, "Well, that is amazing," or not that way. But I always knew when I baked something really good, because there was a, my siblings would say, "Ooh, this is good," you know, those kind of things. So it always made me feel good. So Auntie Anne's comes along many, many years later. And I knew when we created the Auntie Anne's soft pretzel that it was really, really good, because all of the customers raved about the Auntie Anne pretzel. So, you know, nothing is ever wasted. Your history, your right. past, how you grew up and the culture that you grew up in, all of it is really important to who you are today. The Amish people, they, again, it's really all about family. It's about faith. It's about having fun. It's about working hard. When I was a kid in school, first grade, I remember getting up before school, going out to the barn, and we carried milk. That's hard for anybody to understand what I mean, but you milk the cows, and then you pour it into a little bucket, and you carry it to the milk house, and you pour it into a big stainless steel container. And so I did that when I was six. And I remember the day my dad bought me, ooh, I could almost cry about this. I have no idea where that comes from.
Wow.
But the hard work was just part of our life. And there was many things, Katie, I did not feel like doing. But what we learned on the farm is perseverance. And I remember the day I used to carry this really heavy stainless steel bucket. I carried it with both my hands in front of me and took a couple of steps. And then I would set it down. Then I would, you know, they may call that child labor, I don't know, anymore, or abuse of some sort. But back in the day, and even today, the Amish people just teach their children how to work at a very early age. So I remember the day my dad bought me two plastic, they were blue plastic buckets. And I was able to carry two buckets of milk. They were much smaller, and I was balanced out, and I could walk easily with these two buckets filled with milk to take them to the milk house and pour them in the large containers. Anyway, so I have happy memories of my Amish years, my growing up with a family of eight kids. Mom and dad, we knew they loved us. They're not very verbal. My mom and dad never were verbal with love. They believe that the word "I love you" means when you're in a relationship with God, you love him.
Wow.
So "I love you" was never expressed in our home, but that's okay, because I knew my parents, they showed me they loved me. So I feel like that word is overused. I do say "I love you" to many people, friends, family members now, but it was a wonderful life style. And the older I get, the more I really appreciate the heritage that my mom and dad left me. And so I don't feel like the Amish, the farming culture is kind of a, we were Amish farmers, but I think the farming culture is similar. Anybody that was raised on a farm as a kid, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Wow. Now, if you are not comfortable talking to this, that's totally fine. I understand. But I'm sure people are wondering, what was it like leaving the Amish lifestyle or faith? I know some of us in culture hear about Rumspringa and things like that. So you can go into this to whatever extent you're comfortable with, but I'm just wondering.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I have, my life is an open book. I've written a couple of books, so I have no secrets, and I don't mind talking about, but if I get off on the wrong track, well, then you just interrupt me and tell me, okay, I'm done with that. Anyway, but so the Rumspringa and the Amish culture, how hard was it for me to leave, you said, the Amish faith?
Go ahead.
Well, I would say the Amish faith, you know, I carry that with me even to this day. You know, it's a very basic faith in God, believing in Jesus as the Son of God. I mean, it's just that's the very basis. So that's a very Christian based faith. So, so what was it like going from the Amish, black car Amish, I want to say, because at three, mom and dad left the old order, even though my mom and dad were the only, they were the first two, they both came from large families, 11 and 9 kids. And they were both the first ones in their families that left the old order Amish. That's when I was three. And my dad bought a black 1954 Mercury. totally remember the car. But when they left, so it was much more difficult for them because of the shunning part of it. So my mom carried the, I want to say, the sadness of that almost throughout her life, even though she had a relationship. Most of her siblings, my dad's siblings, I think, well, most of them all left the old order Amish, but my mom still carried that, how hard it was for her to leave her family. And they, shunning is for a few months. You have to remember, it's family first. And so the tradition says you have to shun those who leave. But in time, it's still family. And eventually, most people that leave the old order Amish, at some point, they reconcile and begin to do family again as if nothing happened. Wow. Although there are some things that are required, like my mom and dad could never take money from an Amish person, or they would never take money from my parents hand to hand. Like I couldn't hand them, my mom could not hand them $10. She would have to lay it on a table and then they would have to pick it up. Silly little traditions that they had to get, which bypassed, almost surpassed. It didn't matter after a while. For me, when I left the Black Car Amish, there was no shunning, but it was just as difficult for me to leave because I got married at the age of 19. And my husband and I had just left. I had just left the Black Car Amish and was now in a very, very conservative Mennonite church. And I still was wearing my covering, my cap on my head. And my mom and dad always, they told us never to cut our hair. And so when we left the Amish Mennonite and went to the Plain Mennonite, that was fine. But then from there, I went to a charismatic church, which was...
Wow, that's a big leap.
Huge yeah. leap. But anyway, so when I first cut my hair, I remember I went to, I had it cut, and I, on the way home from cutting my hair, I knew I was going to go to my mom and dad's for dinner that night. And I stopped at a gas station. I went to the women's restroom and I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, oh, how can I do this? I don't know how I'm going to go to my mom and dad's house. So I put my covering on top of my head, even with my cut hair. And when I got there, my dad walked out, didn't say a word, just walked out. And that's what he did for about anywhere from, I can't remember exactly, but for months, when I would come home, he would conveniently just walk out of the house, never say anything. So that was very hard for me.
Yeah.
And when you cut your hair and you go somewhere without your covering on, you honestly feel almost naked because, you know, everybody notices and sees that, oh my, Ann Byler, Ann isn't wearing her covering anymore. It sounds silly to everybody else, but that's the tradition that you live with that is so ingrained, that is so, it's very difficult to dishonor your parents and okay. to actually break through that and go into a whole other world that they know nothing of. They don't know anything about that world. Wow. So in time though, again, nothing was ever said. It's not like we sat down and had this conversation about, okay, now I'm done, you know, whatever. It was never that way. It's just that eventually in time, because I believe, Katie, the love of family and the love for each other is greater than the traditions of men or the traditions of the Amish faith at that time. It just, at one point then we just began to reconnect. And my mom and dad, we had the greatest relationship with them. After that, they actually left the old order Amish and or the Black Car Amish church as well at some point then. Wow. So very difficult, but family first, God first, then family. And somehow most Amish people reconnect again.
Wow. So much there. I feel like we can have a whole other conversation just
yeah,
on
could.
That, you know, because I think...
Yes, we could.
You know, there's so much to learn there and to know. And I think a lot of misconceptions and culture about the Amish community and all of that. But I'm thankful for what you shared. And I think there's so much beauty in that family first. Even as you're saying it, I'm like, wow, we've lost that. Right?
Yes, we have. Yes,
and we even, have. You know, even when you were saying that your dad would walk out with your haircut, were you saying that he would eventually come back to the table, like after a time?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
but even
mean-
that. There's yeah. something to learn there for all of us, right? I mean, with the divisive political conversations and offenses, my goodness, we've lost the heartbeat of family yes. that pulls us together, right?
Exactly. So yeah. many stories that you hear, the divisiveness of family issues because of the world in which we live, it can be many different issues, you know, but I experienced that. Like we could have stayed divided. We really could have, because our traditions were deep and our beliefs were strong, right? But I love my parents and they loved me. And there was, I mean, yeah, there was really nothing. And there's been other things in my life that happened then, even after we left the Amish, Black Heart Amish, that could have completely destroyed our family life. But Katie, because the foundation was set in stone, it's set that nothing can really separate us as a family. And we have been tested and tried in a number of ways. And I think every family has those moments, but like we just never gave up on each other.
You said something and I was trying to write it down, but I actually forgot it. You said we could have stayed divided, but because you said something about your beliefs and your faith, your beliefs were, do you remember what you said?
We're greater than our traditional beliefs. I mean, our faith was greater
than
the traditional beliefs, and our love for each other was greater than the tradition of man.
Wow. Wow. I feel like all of us need to just kind of sit with that for a second, especially going into the holiday season. Yeah. It's heartbreaking. And I would love to study this in culture. I don't know that it's being studied or researched yet, but like, I feel like in the last 5 or 10 years specifically, there has been this kind of like, switch, like, it's just off balance where, political conversations, religious disagreements, you know, it goes on and on, outweigh the relational foundations we have with each other.
It's so true, right? But it's very sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot to learn there from the Amish. Yeah,
and I feel like the silence is a good thing. Just being
interesting.
Silence. And I learned how to be still. Like, see how my mom always said to us, all 8 of us kids, she would say this all the time. Little children, love each other. Do not give each other harm. When one speaks to you in anger, do not answer. No, I'm sorry. Little children, love each other. Do not give each other pain. When one speaks to you in anger, do not answer them again. Well, okay, that can sound negative, like, oh, I have my right to say what I feel like saying. But that's the problem. You know, I believe that silence and, you know, when someone says something to me, or when I speak to you or anyone, and I might say something that's hurtful or disagreeable, we disagree, whatever. We feel like today, like we got to keep pounding away at what I think and what I believe and what I want you to hear.
Yeah.
So we have lost the art of silence. Like, just, it's okay to hear it and just be quiet. We don't have to have an answer or an opinion about everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Goodness. That's another conversation topic too, right?
Yes, it is.
Lots of little nuggets here. Well, for time's sake, I want to revisit part of your story. And I'm just becoming familiar with your story. I'm just learning about it. And so if this is incorrect, please correct me. But my understanding is that you started making your soft pretzels and selling them at a farmer's market. Is that true?
Oh, that's true. Sure.
Okay. Yes. So how did farmer's market soft pretzels turn into Auntie Anne's? Tell us what you want us to know about that journey. As an entrepreneur, that's incredibly inspiring to me. So share what you want us to know.
So from that one little farmer's market in Downeytown, Pennsylvania, to Auntie Anne's pretzels around the world is a very long story, I have to tell you.
Sure. No, I can imagine. Yeah.
But, you know, I love telling this story, and I will keep it as short and as succinct as I can, because it's important for people to understand that Auntie Anne's was never created to be a global company. I never would have thought about taking pretzels to Indonesia, being our very first international store halfway around the world. That would never have entered my mind. So I do know, one thing I can tell you very quickly is that we do know that God had created Auntie Anne's, and Auntie Anne's is a modern day business miracle. A miracle is something that defies the odds. Auntie Anne's defied the odds. Jonas and I both grew up in the Amish culture, so we had no formal education. When we bought our very first store at a farmer's market, we had no capital. And as we went to the store that very first day, we had no plan. And you may say, why in the world? Why did you do it that way? Well, it's the only thing we knew. But what we knew, the three things that we had, and starting for starters, what we knew was that we had, God gave us a purpose, and he gave us a product that was better than the best, and he gave us people. And over time, I began to focus on the three things that we knew we had instead of whining and wishing and pining over the things that I didn't have. Because once I got into the business world, I realized, wow, I am a misfit and this task is too big for me. I knew that from almost from the very beginning. But why a farmer's market and why did we start? Jonas and I had gone through some very difficult years. We were married young, as I mentioned it a little bit ago. And we were living our dream. All I ever wanted was my family. All I ever wanted was to serve God, serve our community, just be a good girl, be a good wife, be a good mom. That's all I ever really dreamed about. And so we started out well. Jonas was a young, handsome, ex-Amish guy, and he knew how to work and he loved God. I'm like, this is the man, you know, we're off and running to, you know, living our dream. And so we had two daughters and we were very busy, very involved, I should say, in the charismatic church that we had actually helped to build at that time. And life was good. My theology at that time was life is good. God is harsh. Nobody ever really told me that, but that's what all of my years of being in the Amish, Black Car Amish congregation was, that if you keep all of the Ten Commandments and you're really good, then God will bless you. If you slip up and if you're not good, if you don't obey God or your parents or whatever, then God will be displeased with you. So I carried that theology into my married life. And what I know today over seven decades of real life's experiences is that life is hard and God is good. I'm not confused about that today. But my theology early on really got me into big trouble when life got hard. That theology just didn't work for me. In fact, it just put me in such a dark space. But after we were married about 7 years, and our sweet little Angie, she was 19 months old, and she was walking to my mom's house, we lived on a small farm together. We lived in a double wide, and my mom and dad just lived around the corner in the country. And so we were always back and forth with mom and dad. And that particular morning, Angie was going to my mom's house, and my sister was driving a farm tractor, a front end loader, loading and unloading sand for my dad. And she always looked for the girls. There was five nieces and nephews that were around the house on the farm there. And so she was always looking for the kids and making sure that they were safe and everything. And that particular morning, she looked to see where Angie was, and she didn't see her. And when she backed up to pick up a load of sand, she backed up and then she moved forward. And when she did, she saw Angie's body in front of the front end loader. Angela was killed instantly that day. And that changed me forever. That's another subject. It doesn't mean that I'm not okay, because I am okay. but it changed everything about me. Wow. When it comes to my faith, my belief system, my theology, my family life. The day Angie was killed, she made her ascend into heaven. I knew where she went, and I knew that comforted me just a teeny, teeny bit, you know. But I began my very slow descent into a world of emotional pain and spiritual confusion, because why? Why? I mean, I was a good girl. I believe that God would, I don't know, shield me, keep me, protect me. I guess that's what I believed. I'm not sure. But looking back, bad theology, I think that we need to be prepared and understand that life is hard. And anything can be thrown at you in an instant, in a second, it can change your life. And so as that began to impact Jonas and I in our marriage, we were a happily married couple, living our dream, very involved in the church and just enjoying life. And that slowly, slowly began to change. And so we ended up in just a very silent existence together. We had a 4-year-old daughter at that time as well, who saw my daughter saw the accident, and
wow,
and she was not able to verbalize anything to us about what happened. And anyway, so it really slowly but surely kind of began this dysfunction in our family because of our theology being wrong. So a few months after that, after Jonas and I distancing, and I lost my little baby girl, and I lost my best friend, who was my husband, and my sister was traumatized, and my four-year-old daughter was missing her sister. So, you know, every time you tell your story, you can always feel it. It yeah. doesn't mean that you're not okay. It just means you can feel the emotions of it. All these years later, I can still feel that. But so after 3-4 months of grieving silently, because I wanted everybody to think I'm okay, which is silly. I didn't want to cry in front of anyone. I wanted people to think I'm strong. I don't know. I mean, I didn't want to look weak in front of my sister or my little girl. And I don't know. It's so bad. I mean, that was the wrong path to take. I know that now.
It's real.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do that. You're right. So I went to see my pastor on a Monday, about 3 months later. And he, before I left his office, he took advantage of me physically. And I was shocked. I'm like, what does this mean? What did I do? And I'm still in this state of total grief and still probably not the shock of it anymore, but just trying to adjust to living my life without my baby girl and losing my husband and all these things. And this is what he did to me. And I remember walking out that door, and I decided to keep a secret. I told myself, why would I ever tell anyone? Because I kind of thought, I don't know, I guess I thought it was my fault. I don't know. But that I kept that secret. So keeping that secret, then fast forward for over 7 years, I was in a sexually abusive relationship, which was abuse in every way by our pastor, and continued going to church and tried to pretend that everything was okay for almost 7 years. At the end of those 7 years, obviously, I was a wreck. I was skin and bones. My heart ached. My knees were weak. My back hurt. I was falling apart. But I had to keep the secret. I had to keep my secret because nobody would understand. One day I was praying about it, as I did every single day, deliver me from this evil. But I didn't know how to let go. I didn't know how to word it. I didn't know how to get out of the situation because it was very strong evil. And but one day God just said to me, get up off your knees and go tell your husband. Wow, that's the James 5:16 model. Confess your faults one to another, pray for each other, and you'll be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous person gets a lot done. So, but the beginning of that verse is confess one to another. That's what we don't do very well. I don't come and tell you, you know, what I just did or how bad my life. No, we have this innate desire to keep everything bad inside of us. Like, I can't tell. So that's the secret. That's the strategy of Satan.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. Anyway, so I went to tell my husband, and he that's a whole long story, but we had a chat after. I just made a very short confession to him because I'd lost myself. I didn't even know how to say what happened to me after almost 7 years. So fast forward, that one confession I made to my husband became intrigued about what happened. How could this happen to our family? I mean, we're a strong family in the community, love God. I mean, just everything was set up for us to live, you know, completely healthy spiritually for the rest of our lives, right? And so he became very intrigued with what happened to us and began counseling, studying for psychology, and became a layman's counselor as a free service to anybody who would come to him. Wow. And that was why Auntie Anne started. That's a very long answer to you ask me, why did we start a farmer's market? Well, it's because there was a farmer's market down the road about 20 minutes, and they called, and somebody called us and said, there's a stand for sale for $6,000. And we had no money, literally, we had no money. But when we got the offer, we bought the store inside a farmer's market for $6,000 without sight unseen, because in our hearts, we both felt it immediately that we need to buy this store so that I could make money so that Jonas could keep counseling. So I bought one store at a farmer's market, and we did this, and within weeks, we discovered there were soft pretzels at that store, but they were terrible. And so we're trying to make a very good pretzel, going back to my baking days. I knew it was a horrible pretzel, and I wanted to make it really good. And so we messed with the recipe and did trial and error on that. And after maybe 6 or 8 weeks, we came up with the Auntie Anne pretzel. And immediately, going from hardly selling any pretzels, we were doing pizza and ice cream and a few other little things, we started selling pretzels so fast, immediately, that we could not keep up. We took pizza off the menu, we took ice cream off the menu, and all we sold was pretzels and homemade lemonade. And that was the beginning. And the why is because we had a purpose, and that was to give. We wanted to give. And so Auntie Anne's fully funded a community center that we eventually built. But in the meantime, we had anywhere from 12 to 15 counselors and helping the people in our community for 10 to 15 years. Auntie Anne's fully funded Jonas's counseling services.
So if I'm understanding correctly, this came after, came in the season of healing and rebuilding your family.
Yes, very much. Right? When I told my secret to Jonas, it was 1982. And we started Auntie Anne's in 1986. Yeah.
I'm doing everything I can to not just like weep right now.
Well, it's...
Do you think it's fair to say, and I'm not trying to diminish or anything, I think you can understand my heart in this question, like if your family did not go through all of that, Auntie Anne's would not have been birthed?
Oh, you stole my line right there. I say it all the time.
Really?
What I will say in every speech is, if I would not have made that confession, and I'm not taking away from the power of God.
No, yeah.
From what he does for us. But listen, Katie, we have to make choices in these situations. I have to choose. I have to work it out. You know, our salvation is sealed, it's done. But to work it out here in this life, and to have a better life and a more fulfilled and a mature spiritual walk with God, it takes making choices every single day, the right choices. And I've said it time and time again, if I would not have made that confession that day, I would, number one, I would be dead. And I mean, literally. And there would be no Auntie Anne's. And then I asked the question, what would this world be like without Auntie Anne's pretzels?
I know. A lot of us are like, amen. I'm kidding. We all love Auntie Anne's. Not to make light of it, but you have to laugh. No. Right?
Well, you know what? Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question for you. And I did not know this conversation was going to go in this direction, but I'm so thankful it is. Our listeners, you know, if I were to guess, maybe half of them would identify as Christian and maybe half wouldn't. But we all, I think, we're all on our journey of faith, right? Whatever that looks like. I am a Christian. Right. My followers know this. But I think you brought up an important point that your theology was maybe not in the best place or had some room to grow. There was some true light that needed to be shed on it.
Yes.
Gosh, I feel like I could ask this a few different ways, but I'm just going to go for it. What do you want people to know about God on the other side of your tragedy and abuse and heartbreak, right? Because I think a lot of us could find ourselves resting in that place of that statement you made. Like I've been good, kind of like, why did this happen to me, right? Yes. Why, you know, that overarching question we hear in culture all the time, why do good things or bad things happen to good people, right? Like that whole kind of mindset, right? Or approach to relationship.
Yeah.
Through everything that you went through, what do you wish people knew about God?
I wish they knew about God what I know now. And know that he doesn't make bad things happen to anyone. I know that our daughter was killed because of an accident. Life is hard. Jesus said, in this life, you're going to have troubles. He never said that this is going to be, I don't know where we get his idea that life should be good, all good. So I believe that I was abused because of a choice of one evil man. I didn't plan that. That was not my fault. Angie's death, I didn't plan that. It was not her fault and not my fault. Oh, I could have blamed myself because I did for months. Like, why did I let her walk out my front door and, I don't know, walk up to my mom's house? Well, I made a choice that day. So that I believe our choices, we have to understand the power and the will that we are created with. Why do evil people do bad things? That's the better question. It's not, why did God let this happen to me? It's more to, why do evil people make these kind of choices to hurt people, hurt each other? You know, I had a friend that said to me one time, you know, and we're all sinners saved by grace, but we are not all evildoers. Mm-hmm. Evil is always planned. So that's one really short answer there. But I believe our choices every day, the choice I make today is the life that I will live tomorrow. And the choice I made leaving my pastor's office that day, that one secret, even though that was not my fault, what happened to me. But the secret was I had no idea that the power of that keeping secret, because God is, he wants us to walk in light. I love one verse in the Bible for those of your listeners who read the Word of God. You know, one verse is this, I love this verse, that if you walk in the light, that's my choice now, right? If I walk in the light, as he is in the light, then we're going to connect with one another.
Yeah.
And then the blood of Christ that has given us salvation cleanses us from all sin. Mm-hmm. So it starts with bringing all of my deeds into just my choices. I'm going to live my life openly and honestly, and I'm going to bring my deeds, the good, the bad, the ugly, into the light, you know, particularly the bad and the ugly. We don't want anyone to see that. But it starts with, if you walk in the light, and that to me is a huge choice. And that doesn't answer the question of why did God allow this to happen to me? But I can tell you, I'm at peace with the fact, all the things that have happened to me, I understand. My small mind comprehends that very simply, that life is hard, God is good. And what I know about God today is that he never once left me. And every time I talk to him and ask him for his forgiveness, for mercy, for his love, for his grace, he never turned me away. And that's what I want your listeners to know. He hasn't turned anyone. He won't turn you away. We just don't understand who he is and how much he cares about. I believe that when you're going through hard times today, this is what I believe, is that his son weeps along with us because he became human and he understands how we feel. When we're confused, when we wonder why God, when we're hurt to the core, to the place where we can't get over it, we're frozen in time. I was frozen in time. Mm-hmm. I stayed in this place of pain, even after I made that confession, the guilt and the shame and the anger that I felt. Mm-hmm. Even that, God was able to take on and understand me. And the reasons for the pain in your life, whatever that is, like, first of all, he knows why you hurt. And I believe that what I know today is Holy Spirit, during all of those years, never once left me. He was, you know, the Bible talks about him being in our innermost being. Like, I call that in the pit of my stomach. Like, he's in us, within us. And I know all of those years, I thought I had ulcers. But now I really believe that it was Holy Spirit trying to just stir this, there's a better place. There's a better way. Go walk toward the light. just begin to walk toward the light and you will meet Jesus there.
I call it a holy restlessness.
Oh, exactly. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. There's so many ways to describe God, but I'm telling you, he wants to redeem us.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I'm so glad you said that before I asked this question or make the statement. You know, there's that scripture that so many of us know, whether we're walking in faith or not, or walking with Jesus or not, but he works all things together, And, you know, honestly, Anne, when I was writing this question, I thought that you sold pretzels at an Amish farmer's market as a kid, you know, and they took off and your career was booming since you were a teenager. Like that was, you know, my very quick assumption. Oh my gosh, I just want to weep. But to know that it came on the other side of this, and goodness gracious, how he works all things together. Now, let me ask you this. And if you don't want to go here, that's fine. Was Auntie Anne's part of, did it help restore your marriage as you guys were working together? Oh. What did that look like?
Oh, you're asking some very, very good questions. Yes. So our marriage was restored by the time we started Auntie Anne's. Because again, going back to understanding psychology, and Jonas studied for 7 or 8 years before Auntie Anne's was started. And so because he studied, he learned a lot. And then I learned because we would talk about this. So our marriage was restored before we started Auntie Anne's, but I wasn't restored.
Ooh.
Okay. Because I didn't know that all of the things that happened to me were still inside of me. They don't like go away and fly out in outer space, because every experience that you have, it finds a place in your body. And if you don't tell, you'll never be well. There's different ways of saying that. What you don't reveal will never be healed. And so I go into Auntie Anne's and we're just ecstatic about God's blessing, his redemption in our lives. And wow, it's overwhelming. Like, we can't believe this amazing opportunity that God's given us. And we're just two little Amish kids, really.
It's time to put some pep into your step with Good Ranchers' New Year, New Meat Special. Delicious, safe, and convenient meal prep is just one box away. 2024 is your year to ditch the mystery of the meat aisle and get American meat delivered instead. Subscribe to any box and they'll add over 2 pounds of pre-trimmed, better than organic chicken breasts to your order for free. Not once, not twice, but every order for a year. Let me tell you, Good Ranchers chicken will change the way that you eat chicken. It's pasture raised, given zero antibiotics or vaccines, and is so tender and juicy that you won't believe it's the same meat that you've been eating most of your life. Simply go to goodranchers.com, pick your box, use my code GATHER, and enjoy $189 of free chicken in 2024, plus $20 off your first order. Stock your fridge with easy-to-prepare, clean, delicious meat all year long. Not sure what box to choose? Try their brand new weekly essentials box filled with pre-trimmed beef and chicken that helps you meal prep so that you could save the time without sacrificing the flavor. If you want to start your year off right, then change the way that you buy meat by switching to Good Ranchers. Make sure to subscribe today and use my code GATHER to claim over $200 in free chicken and New Year savings. GoodRanchers.com. Use the code GATHER. American meat delivered.
I want you to know that God is big. He's not limited. He is not limited by the excuses and the reasons and all these things that happen in your life that you say, I can't do this because of that. No, he's not limited to that. I wanted to die when I was 37. I wanted to commit suicide because I truly believed that was my option. That was a better option for me than telling my secret. Can you imagine? Yeah. So just free yourself, begin to talk about what happened in your life, you know? So I got off track right there, but.
Okay.
So Auntie Anne's came to us. We were not pursuing this. We were just, you know, trying to, you know, get through life. We were just happy to be together. And we're like, we would pinch each other that we cannot believe we're still together. And then Auntie Anne's came along. And then this is unbelievable what God is doing for us. So we were happy with one store. We didn't know God wanted us to become a healing agent or an agent of change or a spiritual, help to people around the world. And it was just a pretzel. It's hard for me to explain what I'm trying to say right now because it's so big.
I'm tracking. Yeah.
And it's so miraculous. But I think I have to say that my brokenness was so deep. It was so deep. And I know some of your listeners, it's so deep. You can't even begin to figure out how to get out of that, the depth of that darkness. But I have to just say there's one way I know, and it worked for me, one way. And that is you've got to start talking. You got to tell somebody. It's the one to anothering is what I call the one to anothering. Today, my one to anothering is not committing, is not, confession for the abuse, or even the abuse took me into adulterous lifestyle. It was the abuse and it was the adult then committing adultery. I mean, it's what we do as broken women when we're abused. Yeah. We just find something to make us feel good, you know? So it's not the biggies. What I talk about, that when I talk about the one to anothering, that just tell somebody, be open and honest and confess. Confession is not subjective. Confession is meant to set you free to become the person that God meant for you to be.
Yeah.
So if we can learn to do the one to anothering, that will take us into a whole other world that you don't even know.
Yeah.
It's available to you.
Yeah.
And so I had to, so Jonas and I were married. We were doing it very well, started Auntie Anne's, and then everything began to fall apart inside of me because I began to feel, it's so weird. I mean, it's strange maybe, but I get it. I felt like I was being controlled by the company because we were getting so big. We had 2 stores, then 12 the next year, then 35 the next year, then 50 more the next year. And we grew so fast to 200-300 stores at early on that I began to feel this. I was choking. I was controlled. Felt controlled, same way I felt when I was being abused for almost 7 years. And I didn't connect that. I didn't understand where that was coming from. And then one of our daughters came home and told us that she was abused as well by him as well, the same man, when she was a little girl from the time she was 3 or 4. I fell apart, I crashed, and I burned. And that's when I finally went for therapy. And that's what saved my life. So life is hard. God is good, and you got to find somebody that's really good, somebody that you know, somebody that you trust, somebody that, I mean, I even want to say that you don't need somebody that can quote Bible scriptures to you every single time you talk to them. You just need someone, if you're hurting, to listen to you. I call it that, the power of silence, the power of listening, because what's inside of you has to come out.
Yeah.
Now, you can try to drink it away, try to sex it away, you can drug it away, like you can become a workaholic, or you can even go be a missionary. I have a crazy story about that. But the only way to set yourself free, to come out of this dark place, is to begin to tell somebody. I call it the one to anothering.
Yeah. I love that you're sharing this. And again, another conversation, another topic for a full conversation. Okay. Right? But
we need to move on, right?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. No, it's so rich. You know, I talk a lot about community here, and I love equipping the everyday host with practical skills because we all need them, right?
Fantastic.
You need to know how to cook. You need to know the basics of design. You like all of the basics, right? You know, not perfection, but the basics. Like those things are very important. Yes. But this is community.
Yeah.
And we feel lonely surrounded by people. Why? Because we're missing this. Mm-hmm. We're missing this. And like what you said, I think in American culture, we're taught you need to have the answers. You have to have a comeback. Mm-hmm. You need to prove your intelligence. You need to create codependence, all of these things, right? Like that's what we're taught. But what you said is, no, I think I think the reason a lot of us don't feel comfortable with this confession kind of relationship is because it doesn't feel safe. We haven't created a culture where that's safe. And so what you're saying is so good. It's so simple, but so profound. Let's be people that create a community where we just sit with people in silence and listen and receive and make room for it.
I love that. And, you know, I've said this to a few people in the last year or two, very good friends of mine. I'm good friends with their parents or so, but people I know, and they're worried about, oh, can I tell you this? Because what is that going to impact your relationship? I'm like, no, listen, I have the capacity to hear what you have to say and hold it in my heart and still love your mom and dad or still love, you know, the people that you know that I am connected with. So I feel like Holy Spirit and God will give us that ability. We have the ability to have the capacity to take on and to take in other people's pain until they're better, until they're well. Yeah. And that to me is what saved me. Yeah. I met with someone that had the capacity to hear what I had to say and then be friends with Jonas. And it's the one to anothering, and it's powerful. And that's what saved my life.
So is it safe to say community saved your life?
It is. Communities at large. It doesn't have to be large. It doesn't have to be a whole church building full of people. It's a very small, intimate group of people, community. Yes, absolutely.
This is both a very powerful and a very sad place to end this conversation for now. I think I'm sensing a part two because we are celebrating the launch of your book, Come to the Table, right?
Yes,
ma'am. We are. Well, goodness, I am going to link your book in the show notes for everyone that is going to run and go get it. But I guess if you could give a quick short little paragraph or a few sentences to describe it. Yeah. How would you describe this book? What would you want people to know about it?
Real quick, I wrote the cookbook because obviously the experience with my mother in the kitchen taught me how to be a baker. And I wanted to share my Amish roots with the world in a cookbook so that people could understand how we cook and what we bake and all that. And the other part of it was, I felt like I had that book was inside of me. I just felt like I had to do this to share it with the world. And so in the book, you will have all of my, all of the recipes that I used from the time I was 7, 8, 9 years old until today, which is many, many years now. And so I have most of those, all of those recipes are in this book. And the name of the book is Come to the Table, because that's a whole other subject. In the Amish culture, come to the table, you do it every single day without fail. There's no reason for you not to come to the table. So the name of my cookbook, Come to the Table, really does describe what my family did every single day for the 19 years that I was home, morning, noon, and breakfast, lunch, and dinner, every single day. That's where a family connected. And today, now we're all older, my siblings, and that's where we still connect around the table. So come to the table, find a place, find time, make time. To do this for your family. I know we're living in the 21st century, but it's still, I think, still possible. Thank you so much.
So good, so relatable. And so I was thinking we were going to be talking about corn casserole. And
I apologize.
This is so much more of a rich conversation. Goodness, I'm so just grateful for your transparency, your authenticity. I think it sets a good model for a lot of us of what's possible and how to go first. So much of what we talk about in this community is going first. And I'm so thankful that you trusted me and trusted us with that. And so, well, friends and listeners, I think this is just the first time you're going to see Anne because we have a lot more to talk about with her, hopefully soon. But thank you again for coming on. It has been just a joy. And I have to go have another conversation with these weepy eyes, but it has been a joy to host this conversation. And we're excited for you. We of course celebrate the success of the brand that you built, because as an entrepreneur, I know what a massive, massive amount of work and dreaming and all of that goes into that. But I also want to celebrate the victory of the redemption and the healing in your story too.
Well said.
Yeah. So we celebrate that with you.
Thank you so much, Katie. Yeah, what an honor to be on your show.
Absolutely. Well, guys, I am going to put all of the links in the show notes. Be sure to follow along with her story and celebrate by purchasing her book. And we will see you next week.